So welcome. Welcome to day two. Day three, in fact, of our retreat, because we started on Friday evening. Always find it really amazing how time and space compresses or expands and does all sorts of things on a retreat, because we enter a different realm. And it always plays a little bit with sort of time and space dimension in my experience. So what I'm going to talk about today is I want to explore the relationship between faith and wisdom a little bit. And I'll probably start with some words from Mind in Harmony with Subhuti, who sort of looked at sort of the Abhidhamma approach to the mind and was exploring that in quite detail. And some of you I know are in the midst of that exploration. But what he says in there is that faith is the seedling that will eventually become the tree of wisdom. So faith is the seedling that will eventually become the tree of wisdom. And in some way we can say that there is the sense of reality brought by faith when we have an initial encounter with some truths. We might have this intuitive inkling, and the mind might kind of get a sense, but can't quite get hold of it, can't quite grasp this kind of profound truth. And really, truth needs to be tested, and sort of tested by reasoned analysis and experience. We always need to look at, is this true in our experience? And certainly the Buddha would say that on many occasions he would explicitly encourage people to test their experience, whatever they're hearing, whatever teachings they come across, whatever teachings you come across, run that through the kind of sift of your own being, of your own experience, and then decide, you know, is this making sense? Is this actually ringing true to me? And out of that, so with faith, we might have some kind of knowing. To start with, there might be this conviction that how things are, but it then grows into real understanding and real wisdom when we've tested that through our experience. And I really like that that sort of description of faith being a seedling that will eventually become the tree of wisdom. I think exploring the relationship between faith and wisdom, it is about this interplay. And, you know, at what point do you have the seed? And at point does it become the tree? It's a bit like that with an acorn and an oak tree. When you're looking at an acorn, you might not kind of, you know, the acorn doesn't envisage becoming a tree. It's got no idea it's going to be this massive, kind of majestic, beautiful tree. So I really love that faith being the seedling that will eventually become the tree of wisdom. You can see the importance of faith in spiritual life. So I was also kind of really reflecting on that line. I keep coming back to it with Ratnadeva talking about the mindfulness being holy intending, and then kind of changing it into faith being holy responding. And I thought, why is it keep coming up for me? Why is it resonating so strongly? And I thought, you know what, I'm going to read you the whole poem so you actually know where this is coming from and what this is all about. So here is the poem. It's by Lawrence. Thought, a laugh thought, but not the juggling and twisting of already existent ideas. I despise that self-important game. Thought is the welling up of unknown, life into consciousness. Thought is the testing of statements on the touchstone of the conscience. Thought is gazing onto the face of life and reading what can be read. Thought is pondering over experience and coming to a conclusion. Thought is not a trick or an exercise or a set of dodges. Thought is a man in his wholeness, wholly attending. This poem just blows my mind in some ways. And what it is about is this, it's about understanding. How do you get understanding? How do you get to penetrate into reality? How do you really see things as they truly are without having kind of all sorts of goggles that distort your reality and the, you know, your perceptions? And really, in Buddhist terms, we would call that wisdom. We would call that prajna, having that unobscured understanding of reality, being sort of in one with understanding how things really are. And in that poem, you've got this thought is the welling up of unknown life into consciousness, or thought is gazing onto the face of life and reading what can be read. So you can really see that kind of how we get to understand things, and that understanding arises out of us being bathed in experience and us actually, you know, reflecting, us having experiences, reflecting on them, and then sort of coming closer to what actually rings truth to us. And I thought also, like, why is this poem so strong? And actually, the first time I read this poem was, this is like years ago, maybe 10 years ago. I've come across that particular poem on an evening in a shrine room in London Buddhist Center. Somebody that I really value for their qualities of being a beautiful, compassionate being and a friend read this in the context, I think it was read in the context of a puja actually, and it was a puja on Amoghasiri, and it was extremely strong sort of emotional experience, that particular puja in its beauty. It was a really beautiful sort of ritual. So I've heard it there. And then I've actually used that particular poem as part of my master thesis when I was trying to talk about how we get to understand things. So that poem is actually starting my thesis. And so when I heard it on when Ratnadeva mentioned it for the first time, I thought, oh gosh, looking back at it now, I had a real faith response to that poem all those years ago. You can see the interplay of faith and wisdom, kind of, oh, this is really telling me something. And you can see how over time there is that shift from sort of a deep faith where you just hear something and it resonates with it, you respond to it. With some kind of truth that you might not totally 100% understand, but you are totally moved by that. And then, you know, there it was in the context of a emotional response where I was in the presence of a good friend, in the context of a devotional practice. So you can see that you can see that lucid faith at play. And then there was that longing. I mean, for me, that poem where it says, "Thought is a man in his wholeness, wholly attending." I said, "Yeah, I can be that man. I can be that being that is living in wholeness, wholly attending." So I felt really inspired in that, in that aspect of that. So you can see the relationship here between faith and wisdom. And so I was thinking, like, how is it actually, you know, what is the interplay? You know, what comes first? This whole kind of chicken and egg. Is it the faith? Is it the wisdom? You know, what comes first? And we can have different ways of looking at that, different ways of approaching it. And within our Buddhist teachings that we've got available, we've got different teachings for us. And one of those is talking of five spiritual faculties. So if we want to make progress, there is a sort of a requirement, or there is sort of this path for us, shown to us, of what is it that we might need to be, what we might need to be developing in ourselves, which virtues in some ways we might need to strengthen. And within those five spiritual faculties, you will find that faith and wisdom are both in there. So faith, as in Shraddha, is definitely one of those spiritual faculties, or one of those virtues that are really essential for us to make progress. And wisdom is there as well. The other three, just in case you're wondering what they might be, so it's also mindfulness. So mindfulness in the sense of what we would call sati. So mindfulness in the sense of remembering, constant kind of coming back to our purpose, recollecting when we're sitting on a cushion in the morning and we're meditating, you know, why are we there? Why did we turn up and got up out of bed to sit on a cushion? So that's that recollection, that type of mindfulness. And that type of mindfulness also is linked to then developing concentration, samadhi. And it's in some ways one of the things that we are trying to work in, let's say, mindfulness of breathing, is developing this concentration, developing concentrated in a mind, which is a mind that is very stable. And what that means is that you can have insights arising in that. So there can be inside understanding can well up. And because you are concentrated, it can happen. And because you're paying attention, you might be able to stay with that particular experience when it arises. So those are the other ones. And the fifth one is virya, which is energy. And actually, we do need energy in order, we've talked about that yesterday. Yesterday, we were looking particularly at emotions giving us energy. But here, it's also sort of making an effort so we can sift between what's skillful and unskillful, so we can be motivated and just going and making effort to be more and more skillful, which will help us with our mind being more stable, and that will help us with wisdom arising. So all these five spiritual faculties, they're kind of seen on an equal footing, if you like. You need to develop all of them. And maybe there is something about, you at different times in your practice, there might be different aspects or different of those skillful of those virtues or those faculties that you might need to focus at that time. I do want to talk a little bit more about faith in particular. And I just looked at this story by from Melinda Pagna, and there is like a claim, what marks faith? And the king in that particular story sort of replies that faith makes serene and faith leaps forward. And then he goes a little bit into it, and he talks about how does faith make serene? And it says, when faith arises, it arrests the five hindrances and the heart becomes free from them, clear, serene, and undisturbed. And I was just thinking, we haven't quite mentioned yet maybe about faith, that it's got this real purifying capacity. Faith helps to purify mental states. It's a mental state that when, you know, you are responding wholly, when there is that whole response, what that means is that actually there is no place within your being for anything else. So in that way, it's a really purifying experience. Your mind gets purified. And in the story, the king sort of illustrated this, and he said, well, imagine that you've got some kind of a monarch or king, and there is an army, and they're trying to cross a stream. And when they're crossing the stream, by the way, this is kind of sort of India way. So when they're crossing the streams, you've got elephants, you've got horses, you've got chariots, you've got infantry. So when they're crossing that stream gets really disturbed, agitated, and muddy. Yeah, so it's kind of everything is turned up, vegetation everywhere. And so when they all cross, the monarch with his army, the monarch says, well, can I have some drinking water, please? And his army sort of friends look at him and think, you're not going to drink that stream, really, are you? And he sort of takes out of his hand, he takes out of his pocket a water cleansing gem. And so they take this water cleansing gem, put it in a stream, and all the vegetation flows away, the mud settles. It becomes beautifully clear, serene, undisturbed stream again, and the monarch is having a drink of water. So we can think of this as the stream being the heart, and the army men being kind of yogins or practitioners like us, and the vegetation and the mud is all the defilements of the obstacles that are in the way. And the water clearing gem, that particular gem is like faith. You know, that's what faith is. You need that faith for something else to take place. So for obscurations to be taken away, for things to be more serene, to be settled. So faith is just an incredibly important aspect of our spiritual life. And it's through faith that we can get to wisdom. We can get through deeper and deeper understanding of reality. So there was this other question in there, you know, how does faith leap forward? And this is about leaping forward. So it says, when the yogin sees that the heart of others have been set free, he leaps forward by way of aspiration to the various fruits of the holy life. And he makes efforts to attain the yet unattained, to find the yet unfound, to realize the yet unrealized. So again, to kind of illustrate it with a story, is, and again, the story comes from the same sort of source. There is a talk of a great cloud coming across and bursting over a hill slope. And then as a result, you've got this water flowing down. It fills the hills, sclavs the fishers, gullies. It kind of fills the river in the gully. And the river is totally overflown. You've got banks of rivers totally overflown. And what happens is you've got people standing on the bank and thinking, how are we going to cross this river? This is absolutely impossible. We can't, you know, we can't get over this. And then a person comes along and looks at the river. And it's a bit like, well, you know, has got confidence and kind of says, actually, I think I can cross this. Has got this strength and power, confidence in themselves. And in India, he would find, he would tie his loincloth and just jumped over. And even not knowing how deep the water is or how wide really it is, that would be just that leap in there. And the others, knowing and seeing that person, they then get confidence for themselves because they kind of think, well, if he could have done it, if this person could have done that, actually, I think, you know, I can do that as well. So what you've got in this story is somebody who's got some kind of confidence in their practice, maybe, and that they make a leap even when that leap is unknown. And in them doing that, it gives kind of confidence to others. Others feel inspired, and that longing faith, that kind of faith where they can see for themselves that they can do it, they then jump over this streams themselves. So in Samyutta Nikaya, the Lord is said to say, faith, by faith the flood is crossed, by wakefulness the sea, by vigor ill is past, by wisdom cleansed is he. So we've got this kind of putting together the five faculties or the virtues that we require in order for us to make progress on our path. And in this way, you can see faith and wisdom kind of interplaying together. Now, it's not always presented like that in Buddhism, where faith and wisdom are kind of seen on the same path. And Nagarjuna, in his advice to a king, says that through faith one relies on the practices, through wisdom one truly knows. Of these two, wisdom is the chief, and faith is its prerequisite. So we could understand here that in some ways we need faith to start, because faith might give us a confidence to get involved in practices and to kind of turn up every day. And then out of that faith, out of that prerequisite, we might start to truly know. We might actually have insights arising, and for us to be able to have those insights sort of arising in us, and that understanding to appear. But I just wonder to what extent it's, you know, it's a misunderstanding to think of it that faith is something less than wisdom. Actually, my reading of it, having faith as a prerequisite, you will not get anywhere. You will not get anywhere unless the prerequisite is fulfilled. So for me, having faith as a prerequisite actually means that that wisdom can arise, and without that, that wouldn't be possible. And I think it was a little bit like that with that poem. You know, although I was not aware with the poem at the start, my heart was filled and moved by faith, actually, which made me explore more on the Buddhist path. And out of that, even now, there is more of a recognition of the path, more understanding, more wisdom has arisen as part of that. And with Shraddha, you can think of Shraddha as well as a kind of opposite of craving or thirst. So you are beginning to place your heart on the ultimate sort of the higher goal, the kind of you are making that commitment to respond to your higher ideals. And those higher ideals might be different to the sort of mundane everyday, you know, likes and dislikes. So faith is so essential in us to turn up and then cultivate more sort of serene states of mind, which then allow understanding and reflection to take place, so we can more deeply understand some of the you know, initial insights we might have had when we came across Dharma for the first time, or when we just started practicing. A little bit like what I was talking about, the vision and transformation yesterday. So we can actually deepen our understanding. So for me, the relationship between faith and wisdom is very, very intertwined. And there is different people will have different doorways of how that plays out. And I think when we were reciting the Tiratna Vandana this morning, and when I've read at the start the translation, for me this is where Sangha is becoming so important as a place of exploration, because I think within Sangha, you know, individually we can actually explore what is that path for us, what is, you know, what is actually your experience? How is that experience playing out for yourself? And therefore, what is it that you need to do on your path that will allow you to make progress? So I think that's something that I'd really like us to sort of take away from this, is that there are different doorways for people. And it might be really interesting to become more sensitive in seeing where faith and Shraddha arises and what role it plays for you in relation to wisdom arising. And talking of Sangha, I think it'll be a nice opportunity for us to go into groups and maybe do that exploration for yourself. So we'll have, I think, about 20 minutes in group.
What we'll do is we'll do a period of the Metta Bhavana. So we'll enter into a heart space if that works for us. I'll finish the meditation. We'll do about, say, 35 minutes, 40 minutes of meditation. And I'll finish off with the same mantra, the Padmasambhava mantra that Prajnanita offered us yesterday. It's a particular form of the Padmasambhava mantra, which I find particularly soulful. Prajnanita was saying how emotionally engaging it was for her, and stimulating. there's a term, there's a whole body of poems, songs, and mantras that are called calling the guru from afar. So I think this mantra evokes very powerfully this sense of longing, a sense of having some glimpse of our own potential, and using that quote from Saint Augustine, modifying it slightly, our hearts are made for you, O truth, and they are restless until they rest in thee. So we have a glimpse of our potential, and if that sinks deeply enough, it sets up a longing that echoes in our heart and can be connected with, can be enhanced, can be expressed through mantra. So maybe just explore that possibility when it comes to that final mantra. And we'll finish with, at the end of that mantra, we'll finish this morning session. So I invite you to set yourselves up for a period of meditation. Dropping into your body. Finding that comfortable, stable posture. Scanning the body, seeing if there are any dominant feelings, any dominant tensions. Just noticing what's going on for you now on the level of your physical senses. Maybe tuning into the sounds near and far. Just allowing the sounds to land with you rather than you reaching out towards them. Are there any subtle smells or even strong smells in the room? Is there anything going on with your sense of taste? Is your mouth and tongue, are they dry? Are they wet? And where and how are you most engaged with your sense of touch? It might be the temperature of the room, the sense of your clothes on your body, that contact between textile and skin. Might be the wind blowing in your hair if you're lucky. It might be the pressure of those contact points with the earth as it supports you, it takes your weight. And maybe now, as we're focusing our attention on the body, maybe there's a bit of stillness of mind coming into play. And I invite you, in the midst of that stillness, to turn your attention towards your breath, the sensations of your breath in your body. First, an overall sense of the breath in the body. Invite you to attend to the movement of your ribs, your chest ribs. Front ribs. Maybe a very obvious movement. And maybe less obvious, more subtle, the side ribs and the back ribs. And while we're attending to this part, this area in our body, the chest, the heart area, I invite you to dwell on the heart area, expanding the notion of heart beyond the literal to the metaphorical, the site of our emotional life. How's your heart? Are there any movements of the heart? If your heart were singing, what would be its song? So a period of the metta bhavana, cultivation of loving kindness. And in the first stage, we bring ourselves to mind. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be free from suffering. If it helps to connect with the breath, you could try on an in-breath, connecting with your experience. On an out-breath, wishing you yourself well in that experience. In-breath, connection. Out-breath, wishing well. if you find yourself distracted at any stage, that's fine, that's what the mind does. Maybe return to a sense of the posture, the body as a whole. And then listen to your heart song. And wish yourself well. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. May I be happy in my heart of hearts. In the second stage, we bring to mind a friend. We make them as present as we can, maybe imagining their voice, their face. Maybe they're here with us in our imaginations, breathing next to us. And we wish them well. May they be well. May they be happy. May they be free from suffering. We bring to mind a neutral person, maybe someone who served us at a checkout, or we noticed on the street, maybe a neighbor whose name we don't know, but we see every now and again. Someone, in a sense, who represents the vast majority of humankind. We share the planet with them, but we don't know them very well. And we can imagine that they live a life very similar to our own, with needs very similar to our own, with definitely with a wish to be happy, to not suffer, just like ourselves. We share our common humanity. And that's a bond. We have so much in common. Just as we know, to the extent that we know our own lives, we can imagine their lives. May they be well. May they be happy. May they be free from suffering. we bring to mind a difficult person, someone perhaps whom we've clashed with recently. Again, we make them as present as we can, imagining their voice, their face. And we reflect that we narrow them down to whatever the problem they represent for us, perhaps. And they are so much more than that. So much more than we could ever imagine. They are not limited by our narrow take on them. And we wish them well. Just like us, they want to be happy and free from suffering. May they be well, may they be happy, may they be free from suffering. We begin the final stage by bringing to mind all four people, ourselves, our good friend, neutral person, and our difficult person. And we explore the possibility of opening our heart equally to all, without bias, without preference, wishing all well. May each of us be well and happy and free from suffering. And then we extend the range of our well-wishing. We can start with everybody here in this virtual space. May each of us on this retreat be well and happy, free from suffering. Maybe we can include people who are on the retreat, but maybe not at this particular session. May we all be well and happy and free from suffering. Now extending your well-wishing to anybody who might be in the same room, same building, same street as yourself. May they all be well and happy and free from suffering as they go on about their business. Extending still further to everybody in your part of London or or wherever you are in the world, just the locality, town, city, wherever you are. All those beings, maybe you can extend beyond the human to animal life, plant life. May they all be well and happy and free from suffering. You might imagine your well-wishing like a tide of bright light extending further and further, a disc beginning to cover more and more ground, maybe the whole country that you're living in. May all beings in your country be well and happy, and free from suffering. Birds in the air, the insects, the worms, beetles underground. Extending our radius of well-wishing further and further, crossing the oceans, including all those beings in the oceans, all the fish, all the plant life, all the algae, mammals, great whales. and then reaching land again, whole continents. Allow your well-wishing to extend evermore around the planet. May all beings on this planet be well, happy, happy in their heart of hearts. Om Mahum Patra Guru Atma Siddhi Om Mahum Patra Guru Atma Siddhi Om 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 Om Mahum Patra Guru Atma Siddhi Om